taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, this is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free, and part of that teaching is answering questions. I love questions. I know I'm weird, but I do. I love when people ask me questions. And today I'm going to answer a question that was posted at my website. I'm going to summarize it. The person went into some details, but the basic question was, how can a federal judge temporarily suspend a state law? Excellent question. Excellent question. We have a perfect example here of a federal judge basically putting as several headlines put it, halts or other ways stops Texas the heartbeat law, what was they referred to as the abortion law. Now, I did track down a copy of the injunction that was ordered, but I want to answer that question first. Is how can this happen? How can a federal judge overrule a state law? And the answer is really pretty simple. It's because the people of the state allow it. Notice I said the people of the state allow it. Now, let me back up, and I need to make a couple things plain for what I'm about to describe to make any sense. First and foremost, Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution states that it is the supreme law of the land. Only federal laws made pursuant to the Constitution only laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are also considered supreme, and treaties which are made within the powers of the Constitution of the United States, delegated by the Constitution, are also supreme. That's one thing you have to keep in mind. The other is the 10th Amendment, which is a reminder that the federal government was delegated certain powers, and that any power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution does not belong to the United States. It belongs either to the states, or if it's denied to the states, it belongs to the people. So we need this as an understanding, as a framework to look at what is going on. Now, I looked at the injunction, the order that was put forth, and it starts with a lie. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It starts with a lie. The introduction starts with a person's right under the Constitution to choose to obtain an abortion prior to fetal viability is well established. This is not true. This is not a right under the Constitution, because it goes beyond, because it's a direct violation of the Constitution. Now, let me explain. The Supreme Court case Roe v. Wade is not law. It's an opinion. And in that opinion, the court found that your right to not be secure in your person's, houses, papers, and effects, to your right to due process, prevents the government from interfering in the decision about getting an abortion. It then went on to create, out of whole cloth, out of thin air, a set of standards by which this decision could be impacted, and one of them being that at viability, the state, once the child in the womb was considered viable, the state had an interest in protecting what the court referred to as potential life. This completely ignores the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment, which says you cannot be deprived of life without due process. So the Constitution, first of all, the Constitution does not establish a right to obtain an abortion. It doesn't. The courts establish it. The Supreme Court established that. Second, the Constitution says once life is detected, you cannot deprive someone of that life without due process. So that opinion is a direct violation of the Constitution. Now, the judge went on in the order he issued, fully aware that depriving its citizens of this right by direct state action would be flagrantly unconstitutional, the state contrived an unprecedented and transparent statutory scheme to do just that. The court said, in Roe v. Wade, said making it criminal to obtain an abortion or perform an abortion was a violation. The state merely did what the courts directed. It says, listen, if it can't be a crime, if it can't be a criminal act, let's make it a civil act. Simple. You can't put someone in jail for this, but you can sue them. They also went so far to say, listen, if you don't like the fact that the state can do it, we'll let the individuals, we'll let the people do it. So as the order went on, the state created a private cause of action by which individuals with no personal interest in or connection to a person seeking an abortion would be incentivized to use the state's judicial system, judges, and court officials to interfere with the right up to an abortion. Well, yes, the law does create a private cause of action, and no, it does not exclude people that have no interest in it. That would be, I guess, they're expecting the judges to do that. I wrote an article on this particular law. You can find it on the website, constitutionstudy.com. And I go into the details of that's actually the one problem I see in it is that it's a very open-ended of who can sue. But notice, it says, to interfere with the right to an abortion. There is no right protected by the Constitution to an abortion. You are free, you are at liberty until that liberty impacts the life of someone else, which includes, by the way, the baby in the womb. The judge also said, rather than subjecting its law to judicial review under the Constitution, the state deliberately circumvented the traditional process. Wrong. The state merely took what the Supreme Court said. It is wrong for Texas to create a law to create a crime to perform an abortion before viability. It created a law that was not a crime. It did exactly what the court said it could do, or actually more accurately, what the court didn't deny it. And it went through and it did exactly what they wanted. So we then have this whole big, long case. Now, the thing we need to remember is this type of injunction was denied by the Supreme Court. Right? So there's a couple things going on here. First, we have to recognize that this federal judge in Texas has basically said, the Supreme Court said we couldn't issue an injunction. This needs to be handled in court first. This judge simply said, no. A district judge in the Western District of Texas, Austin Division, simply said, I don't believe the Supreme Court was right. I'm going to throw out this injunction. I'm going to put this injunction out anyway. Now, so this district court basically is going directly against the Supreme Court of the United States. But you see, that's not the root of the problem. It's not a distraction. That's the minutia, right? So you have a district court saying the Supreme Court was wrong when it failed to put an injunction in place, so I'm going to do it anyway. And it's doing it based on this flawed, irrational reading that suddenly the Supreme Court made up a right to get an abortion. When all it said was, people have a right to choose, but that's not a state issue between a doctor and a pregnant woman, but the Constitution does say the states have the requirement to protect life. So Texas did something very smart, right? They said we're protecting life. The Supreme Court said we could not make it a criminal case. We made it a civil case, and basically this judge doesn't like it. But here's the part that I want everybody to understand. I want everybody to wrap their heads around. The fact that a judge issued this order is really, it's not meaningless, but it isn't what everybody thinks it is. See, in reading articles about this, they talk about the order, they talk about this ruling, and it sounds like, the judge has issued this, and you know, everybody must bow and genuflect. But they completely miss the constitutional authority of the courts. Now, to explain this, I'm going to go back to Federalist Papers number 78, written by Alexander Hamilton. He says, "Whoever alternately considers the different departments of power must perceive that in a government in which they are separated from each other, the judiciary, from the nature of its function, will always be the least dangerous to the political rights of the Constitution, because it will be least in capacity to annoy or injure them. The executive not only dispenses the honors, but holds the sword of the community. The legislature not only commands the purse, but prescribes the rules by which the duties and rights of every citizen are to be regulated. The judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or of the wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatever. It may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend on the aid of the executive arm, even for the efficacy of its judgments." That's an important statement. Let me read those last two sentences again, because they are extremely important to understand. "The judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse." In other words, the police don't work for the judges. The judges cannot spend money. They don't control the sword, neither do they control the purse. Continue the quote. "No direction either of the strength or wealth of the society, and can take no active resolution whatever. The courts do not have the power to enforce this order." Now, we've been trained, we've been brainwashed to refer to orders and rulings because the judges want us to think of them as rulers. This judge is not a ruler. Now, he's issued an order, which means nothing until the executive branch decides to enforce that order. But I want you to kind of put a pin right there. All right, so this judge's order doesn't mean anything unless the executive branch enforces that order. So put a pin in there. I'll get back to that. I want to continue the quote. "It may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm for the efficacy of its judgments." Right? That's our pin. The courts can't do anything. They have merely judgment. Now, why is this important? This is important because of that first thing I told you need to keep in mind. Article 6, Clause 2, the Supremacy Clause. The Supremacy Clause says that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are also supreme. Now, Roe v. Wade is not a law of the United States. Why? It did not go through the lawmaking process, the legislative process. Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1. All legislative power is vested in a Congress of the United States. All of it. There's nothing outside of that. The only people who can create laws of the United States are Congress. That's it. The president can't create law. The judges can't create law. So Roe v. Wade is not a law of the United States. So when, as I read from the court's quote-unquote order, "The United States accuses the state of banning nearly all abortions after 6 weeks and months before a pregnancy is viable in open defiance of the Constitution." That is a lie. The Constitution does not say that. The Constitution does not say viability is the trigger for the ability of a state to protect life. It doesn't say that. That is a lie. Continuing on. "Because SBA clearly violates the Constitution," which it does not, parenthetically, "the United States alleges that the state adopted an unprecedented scheme to insulate the state from responsibility. The United States seeks a declaratory judgment that SB 8 is invalid under the Supremacy Clause and the 14th Amendment, is preempted by federal law, and violates the doctrine of intergovernmental immunity." All right, let's unpack this for a second. SB 8 does not violate the Constitution. SB 8 violates an opinion of the Supreme Court. Period, end of story. Pound that into your head. When someone says SB 8 violates the Constitution, that is a lie pointed out. There's nothing in the Constitution that sets a that sets viability as the point for protecting life. Doesn't exist. It's not there. It's made up by a court. Now, when it goes on to say that the United States says that the Texas law SB 8 is invalid under the Supremacy Clause. Well, okay, Supremacy Clause. Constitution of the United States is supreme law of the land. Where in the Constitution does it say you only have to protect life once it is considered viable? It's not there. It's not a violation. So is it a law of the United States? Well, the only law, quote unquote law, is this Roe v. Wade opinion, which is not a law of the United States because it did not go through the legislative process. So this is not a violation of the Supremacy Clause. Is it a violation of the 14th Amendment? Well, the only thing I could think of in the 14th Amendment is the Due Process Clause, but the Texas SB 8 law actually reinforces, it's following the 14th Amendment because it says you cannot deprive a child in the womb of life without due process. There must be a process that says this is the reason. Because the SB 8, go back and again, read the article I did on SB 8. It specifically says in medical emergencies, you cannot be sued under SB 8. So if a doctor is dealing with a patient and due to a medical emergency, maybe the mother was in an accident. Maybe the mother has disease. Maybe there's a course of treatment that will save the mother's life or save her from serious injury, serious disease, but it would cause the death of the child. That is not a situation that you can be sued under SB 8. So the 14th Amendment is actually being upheld by SB 8, not infringed upon. It says, is preempted by federal law. No, there is no federal law. You have the opinion of a court that is not federal law. It did not go through that process. And they claim that it violates the doctrine of intergovernmental immunity. That's linguistic poppycock. That's word salad. Right? Intergovernmental immunity basically says that in the area where a government is sovereign, another government can't sue it. Well, it's actually the federal government that is violating intergovernmental immunity. Since the United States, through the Constitution, is not authorized, it is prohibited from involving itself in medical decisions. That's right. It is prohibited by the 10th Amendment from interfering from exercising a power not delegated to it by the Constitution. There is no power for the United States to make medical decisions. There is no power to supersede the Constitution. There is no power to determine when life begins and when it does not begin, when it will be protected and when it will not be protected. It is actually the United States which is violating the doctrine of intergovernmental immunity because they are interfering with a state law that falls under state power, and their claims of constitutional infringement are all made up by the United States, not by the Constitution. So how is this allowed to continue? It's simple. The people of Texas, I'm only picking on Texas today because this is a Texas law. The people of Texas are ignorant. They act as if they are subjects of Washington, D.C., and that the state of Texas is a vassal. It is a creation. It is a subject of the government of Washington, D.C., rather than realizing that, no, we, the people, ordained and established the Constitution. We did so through the states. We, the people, through our states, created the federal government. We set its boundaries. We set its limitations. We delegated it power and said this far and no farther. But the states forget that they created the federal government, that they have power over the government. So when Texas says it's going to sue, it's going to challenge this injunction, fine, be my guest. But remember, you don't have to. Texas can just as easily look at that federal judge and say, listen, this is beyond your purview. there is no authorization in the Constitution for you to make medical decisions. Period. End of story. And since federal courts are part of the government created by the Constitution, they were created by the Constitution. Your only point is that, oh, it violates not the Constitution. They say the Constitution. No, it violates the opinion of a court. Too bad. We are exercising our authority as a sovereign state, free and independent state, joined together in other states in a voluntary union. We did not authorize you to require that we kill our children, that we allow the death of the unborn children once life is detected. We did not authorize that. You have no such power. Texas needs to stand up. Now, Texas is probably not going to stand up because the people of Texas hire cowards in their government, for the most part. And again, it's not just Texas. All 50 states do it. We hire people that don't know the Constitution, don't understand the constitutional structure, and are afraid to stand up because they're going to get called names, they're going to get yelled at, maybe the FBI shows up and they might have to stand up, and they don't think the people of their state will back them. Do you want to know why this judge got away with this? Because the people of Texas, nobody believes the people of Texas will stand behind their government if they were to stand up to this encroachment by the federal government. And the people of Texas will not demand their representatives in the House of Representatives actually issue articles of impeachment for bad behavior from this Texas judge. This Texas judge issued an order based on lies. If the judge doesn't understand that, then he or she is unqualified to hold office. If this person hasn't read the Constitution, doesn't read and understand the Supremacy Clause and the Due Process Clauses, they are unqualified to sit on that seat. So Mr. Pittman, the U.S. District Judge, you've acted badly. This is bad behavior. And Article 3, Section 1, I believe it's Clause 2, says you only hold office during your good behavior. There is no good behavior in this. But you see, the people of Texas won't do anything about it. Nobody believes they'll support their government if they stand against it. They're not demanding that this gentleman be impeached for his bad behavior, for his violation of his oath of office. That's why this stands. The question that was asked, how can a federal judge suspend a state law? Because the people of the state tolerate it. And because the people of the United States have tolerated this abuse of judicial power for decades. That's why this happens. The only thing we can do about it is to learn to stand up, to recognize our rights, defend them, and assert them. Now, I'm working on a new course. This course, I've done this before in person. It's called the Constitution Study. And I'm actually doing a subset of that that'll be available free, still being developed, still in process. So keep your eyes open. But it is designed based on a quote from John Jay. Every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they'll sooner perceive when they are violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. That is the goal of this course. To be better prepared to first recognize when our rights are being infringed and to be better prepared to defend and assert them. Now, I will probably start announcing this later in October. November 1st is actually my target date to start announcing all this and getting stuff in place. But this is important. This is what we do here at the Constitution Study. We read, we study, and we defend our rights and the rights of our neighbors. That's what we're trying to do here. Now, this person asked me a question. They went to the website, constitutionstudy.com. On the menu bar, there's an ask a question. Click on that, and you can ask me a question. Now, I'll respond to you generally via email as soon as I reasonably can. But if it's a question like this, and if you want me to talk about it on the radio, just say so in the question, and we'll talk about it on the radio. as long as it's a legitimate constitutional question. I mean, we do have some standards. But this is how you can get involved. I tell you, when you read the Constitution, please read it. Create two lists. One list are the things that you discovered, things you didn't realize before. And the other is questions. What questions do you have? And then bring them here. Post them on the Constitution. Again, constitutionstudy.com. Go to ask a question and ask the question. And it'll give you an answer. You can also join my live Q&As. Twice a month, I host a live Q&A. It's on the second and fourth Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find me on YouTube, Twitter. Soon, I hope to be on Rumble. Or you go to constitutionstudy.com. You look at the calendar on the right-hand side. You will find the Constitution Study Live Q&A. You can register and you can join us on Zoom. And I love when you join on Zoom because we can have an interaction when we ask the question. It's not posting a question and then I answer it and I go off to other things. We can actually have a conversation, which is a really excellent way to get those questions answered. And to make sure that I'm answering the question you actually wanted answered. Sometimes, you know, with the communication. But that's how we engage. So if we want to be free, we must learn how to defend and assert our rights because government won't. Government has failed to defend our rights. We must do it for ourselves. And if we don't, we're going to continue to be ruled by oligarchs in black robes who ignore the law, who ignore their oath, because they want their opinion to supersede the supreme law of the land. Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to check out Healthy Cell. Now, I remember as a kid, my mother used to take a whole fistful of vitamins every morning. And this morning, my wife, she has me taking vitamins every morning too. And, you know, originally it was a bunch of pills. Well, Healthy Cell's kind of reinvented the vitamin for the first time since the 1930s, almost 100 years since the vitamin has been significantly reinvented. It is a easy-to-use gel pack. It is designed for your body to absorb it more effectively, to boost your immune health, help you sleep better, help you focus, help you live a healthy life. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud. Try one of their formulas. Try the focus and recall. So I don't know if, like you, at the end of the day, I tend to get a little fuzzy. I start losing focus. Try focus and recall. It'll help your short-term focus. It'll help your long-term memory and brain power. And again, you can get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we are talking about federal overreach. Specifically, we're looking at a lot of we're starting with the federal judiciary. We talked about the Texas abortion law because of someone who asked a question. I love questions. I'm an old Star Trek fan. I love the original series. And There's a City on the Edge of Forever. There's an episode where they come to this time portal, and someone asks a question, and the pilot says, "Since before your sun burned hot, I have waited for a question." All right, I'm not waiting that long, but I love when you do ask questions. So please head to constitutionstudy.com, click the Ask a Question, simply ask me a question. Now, again, I dealt with the Texas abortion law, but that's not the only recent example we have of judges going well beyond their powers to impact our lives. So a federal judge, a federal court has blocked a California law banning private prisons. So I read that headline and said, ooh, this ought to be interesting. So I started reading the article and, you know, I don't trust the media. So I go and I double check and I found the actual appeals court opinion. I know they keep calling them rulings. It drives me nuts. But a panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has heard this case and they basically overturned a district court's order because the United States is challenging this law. Along with a private group called the GEO Group. I'm assuming they run privately funded prisons. Now, what is the logic behind this? Well, according to the Ninth Circuit, which I like to call the Nutty Ninth or just the Ninth Circus because they're overruled so often. They've gotten a little better recently, but they're still kind of nuts. According to this court, the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement relies exclusively on private detention centers in California. Later on, it says, by the end of the decade, AB 32 will deprive the United States of the option to continue contracts with GEO and its other contractors. So again, not trusting a court as far as I could throw the courthouse, I actually found AB 32. I found the actual text on California's legislative website. And so let me tell you what it actually says. And this deals with the Department of Corrections, California Department of Corrections. It says, on or after January 1st, 2020, the department shall not enter into a contract with a private for-profit prison facility located in or outside of the state to provide housing for state prison inmates. On or after January 1st, 2020, the department shall not renew any existing contract with a private for-profit prison facility located in or outside of the state to incarcerate state prison inmates. After January 1st, 2028, a state prison inmate or other person under the jurisdiction of the department shall not be incarcerated in a private for-profit prison facility. Now, I want you to notice a couple things. Where does the United States enter into this? This is a law of the state of California directing the Department of Corrections of the state of California not to use private for-profit prisons. Now, whether you think this is a good idea or a bad idea, I'm not entering into that discussion. Does the state of California have the authority to determine how it will house state prison inmates? Because, again, subsection A says they can't house state prison inmates. They say they can't contract with a private organization to house state prison inmates. It says it can't renew a contract to house state prison inmates. And it says that no state prison inmate or other person under the jurisdiction of the department shall be incarcerated in a private for-profit facility after January 1st, 2028. So here's the problem. Here's the rub. Everything they've done so far deals with state prison inmates. You get down to section 9501. And it says, except as otherwise provided in this title, a person shall not operate a private detention facility within the state. There's where ICE gets bent out of shape because they operate private detention facilities, which is where the court wrote, quote, as a preliminary matter, the panel held that the appellant's claims were justiciable. By the end of the decade, AB 32 will deprive the United States of the option to continue contracts with GEO and its other contractors. A little further, it said, the panel held that AB 32 conflicted with federal law and could not stand. Under the Supremacy Clause, a state law must fall if it stands as an obstacle to the accomplishment and execution of the full purposes and objectives of Congress. Under the presumption against preemption, court assumes that federal law does not supersede the historic police powers of the state unless there is clear and manifest congressional purpose. This is where the court went off the rails. understand the Supremacy Clause, which is Article 6, Clause 2, says this Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the constitutional laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. So the judge is only partially correct. See, according to the Supremacy Clause, a state law must fall if it is in conflict with the Constitution or laws of the United States. Doesn't say anything about purposes or objectives of Congress. Only the laws made pursuant to the Constitution are supreme. So the question is, has Congress passed a law requiring ICE to hold inmates in a privately owned facility within the state of California? I haven't seen it. Maybe there is, but I don't know of any law of the United States that says ICE must hold its inmates in a detention, in a privately owned detention center within the borders of the state of California. So this is not a violation of the Supremacy Clause. But it gets even weirder. The court went on to say the presumption does not apply to areas exclusive federal regulation, such as detention of immigrants. Tell me, where in the Constitution is the federal government given the authorization to regulate immigration? It doesn't. Oh, no, it does not. I know everybody thinks it's a federal power. It is not a federal power. Congress is given the authority to regulate, to set standards for naturalization, not for immigration. So when the court said California did more than just exercise its traditional state police powers, it impeded the federal government's immigration policy. Well, excuse me, judges of the 99th Circuit, that's too bad. You see, the federal immigration policy is not supported by the Constitution of the United States. Now, California has every right. The people of California, through their elected representatives, has every right to determine whether or not to allow private detention centers, privately owned detention centers, within their borders. Unless and until Congress can pass a law that is pursuant to the Constitution that requires that a department of the government house its detainees in a private detention facility within the borders of California, let's face it, the 99th got it wrong. This is a federal supremacist idea. It's the idea that, well, the federal government wants this, therefore the states must bow. California, as crazy as California is not a vassal of Washington, D.C. California has every right to say, no, we will not use state detention facilities. We will not house our people in it, and we won't allow it within our borders. If the ICE wants to put prisoners within the state of California after 2028, they must use publicly funded prisons. In other words, they must contract with the state of California to do it. If they want to put them in private prisons, if they want to continue their contracts with GEO, then they must do it outside of the state of California. The fact that the federal government wants this does not supersede the powers of the sovereignty of the state of California. But that's too much for the nutty ninth to understand. And I'm not surprised. Remember, I've talked to lawyers for years, and I asked them one simple question. When you were in law school, did you study the Constitution or constitutional law? Almost all of them state that they studied constitutional. I've had one person say they studied the Constitution. Everyone else said constitutional law, which is the opinion of judges, not the law. There is no law of the United States to that the state of California has violated. There is the preferences of the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement does not supersede the sovereignty of the state of California. The nutty ninth is wrong. The nutty ninth has violated, they've usurped the powers of the state. They have violated their oath of office. They are just plain wrong. And since we, the people, never delegated the power to the United States to regulate immigration and customs, ICE is an illegal agency. Now, I'm not saying that's a smart decision. I'm not saying that things like a customs should not be handled at the United States level. I'm saying we never did it. Therefore, that department is illegal. Now, you can go through all the other nonsense. What you have is you have the federal government in a private prison that has a contract. They like that. They're reinforcing that. And now you have another entity of the federal government saying the federal government gets what it wants, regardless of what the law of the Constitution says. All of their quotes about it violating the Supremacy Clause and nonsense, baloney, garbage. It's why I tell you must read and study the Constitution for yourself, so you would recognize, wait a second, where does the United States get the authorization to do this? Where does the United States get the authorization to tell California how it must run its prison system? To tell the people of the state of California what they must and must not allow within their state? Because it's not within the purview of the federal government to do this. This is a usurpation of power. See, when they created the federal, when we created the United States, the states were sovereign, and they delegated some of their powers originally under the Articles of Confederation to the United States. That then got redone under the Constitution. And the same thing, we gave some of those powers to the United States. The 10th Amendment states any power not specifically delegated to the United States does not belong to it. Therefore, ICE is criminal. And the federal government mandating that the state of California cannot have, has to support private detention facilities to make ICE's life easier, is itself a violation of the supreme law of the land. Therefore, it's a crime. And in doing so, they are depriving the citizens of California their ability to govern via their own consent. They are depriving them of their power to consent to their own government. Sounds like a crime to me. Now, I've spent most of this program talking about federal judicial overreach, because that's the question I was asked. And again, I thank you for the question. Please send me more, constitutionstudy.com. Just click on the Ask a Question. I love answering questions. But this is only one example. And this has been a long-going example. This type of stuff is going on for decades. It's been on probably all my life. But what we're seeing is another usurpation of powers. Federal overreach going crazy. It's ramped up under the last several months. And I blame the American people for voting to tell their states to hire this buffoon we have in the White House. Not simply the buffoon in the White House, but this entire Marxist structure that has permeated the government in Washington. We hired most of these idiots, or we hired the people that hired these idiots. So when Merrick Garland says, we're going to get the FBI to look at parents who are arguing with their school boards and treat them as domestic terrorists, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to stand up. Get up on our hind legs and fight. I don't mean wars in the streets. I don't mean firearms. I mean we need to stand up and say, oh, hell no. I have already contacted my sheriff. I want you to contact your sheriff as well. Ask them if they and their deputies are prepared to defend these parents against federal intimidation, against a criminal attack on the rights of the parents to control, to inform their local school board. Simply because they get loud, simply because they refuse to be silenced by their employees, does not make them domestic terrorists. This is a usurpation of the state powers. So first, contact your sheriff. Say, what are they going to do? Are they prepared? Are they prepared to march in force and arrest FBI agents that are attempting to intimidate parents in school board meetings? Are they prepared to arrest any government agent that attempts to intimidate people to give up their right to petition a government for a redress of grievance. Next, we need to go to our state houses. Contact your state rep, your state senator, whatever term you have in your legislature. Contact them. Ask them, what are they doing to support parents? Contact your governor. Ask your governor, is he prepared, he or she prepared, to have the executive branch detain and arrest any federal agent that comes into this state and intimidates the citizens without federal cause? Because there is no evidence, zero evidence, that this has anything to do with domestic terrorism. This is a bunch of whiny crybaby administrators, people on school boards who don't like the fact that their decisions are being challenged, who don't like the fact that parents are standing up to their tyranny, and they're trying to find a way to get the bully to come shut them up. Your governor must stand. Your state attorney general must stand. We must sue. Merrick Garland must be sued. Merrick Garland should be charged with a crime. Except the FBI works for him, so there's a lot of good chance of that. How about we impeach Merrick Garland for attempting to intimidate the American people? See, to deprive them of their right to petition the government for a redress of grievance is a violation of the Constitution of that state. For a federal actor to claim the authority to deprive someone of the right to petition a government for redress of grievance is a violation of the First Amendment. There's a distinction between the two, but it's an important one. Merrick Garland has violated the Constitution, the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. He is attempting to deprive the citizens of this country of their right to petition a government for redress of grievance. That is a federal crime, Title 18, Section 242 of the United States Code. It is what he has done is a federal crime. It's about time the states start treating it like that and say, hell no. You come into our state, you attempt to intimidate our citizens, we will lock you up. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know exactly which law it violates, but it's got to violate something. I'm not allowed to go out and intimidate someone to get my way. I'm not allowed to extort people. And if I can't do it, damn well the federal government can't do it. That's your calling card. That's your action today. That's your call to action today. Contact your sheriff, contact your governor, ask them what they are doing to protect the parents that they represent from this intimidation, from this deprivation of their rights, from this criminal activity out of Washington, D.C. What are they doing? And if their answer is hemming and hawing or nothing or mealy mouth or just, well, we're going to sue, then tell them, then you need to be fired and we need to find someone with a spine. Well, it's a federal law. I don't know. That is an illegal, that's a federal act of a bureaucrat. There is no legitimate law of the United States. There is no law of the United States created within the powers pursuant to the Constitution to do this. This is a federal crime. States, stand up. And if your sheriff won't do it or your governor won't do it, tell them right then and there, it is your right, it is your duty to remove them and find someone who will. The Declaration of Independence says governments are created to protect our rights. And it says whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Ladies and gentlemen, your sheriff, your governor are those powers. If they are destructive to protecting your rights, they need to be removed. Their offices, their administrations need to be altered or abolished, period. It is our right, but it is up to us to do it. Later in the Declaration, it says, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evidence the design to reduce them, the people, under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. That is just as true with Merrick Garland as it is with the executive branch of the federal government, as it is with the executive branch of your state government, as it is with the executive branch of your county government. go to your sheriff. If they will not protect you, if they will allow you to be reduced under absolute despotism of tyrants anywhere, it is your right, it is your duty to throw them off and get new people to do it. Tell them right to their face, we created this office. We established you in this office. We can take you out and find someone who will do the job. If you won't do your job, if you won't fulfill your oath, we will replace you with someone who will. That's how you react to these tyrants. Whether it be a federal judge telling Texas that they have to violate the 14th Amendment of the Constitution and allow children to be killed without due process, or telling California that they are not sovereign, they must allow private detainees because ICE wants it. Or you have the petty tyrant, whether it be Merrick Garland coming after our parents, whether it be Joe Biden and his threat of an executive order to mandate vaccines in businesses of 100 employees or more, any of these are petty tyrants, and they will continue to act that way until the American people realize the Constitution of our states and of the United States are our legal authority to look them in the eye and say no, to remove them, to put better people in place, and if necessary, to defend ourselves against their tyranny. Remember, Thomas Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. That's what we're trying to do here. We are trying to educate the people so they will be informed, so they can correct these abuses of constitutional power. But we need to stop looking for someone else to protect us, someone else to defend our rights, someone else to do the work. If we just get somebody in the right place, that has not worked. It will not work. Governments have abandoned their responsibility to defend our rights. Back on Independence Day, I wrote an article called The Redeclaration of Independence, where I went through the Declaration of Independence in 1776 and found those exact same abuses in the government in Washington, D.C. in 2021. Governments have abandoned their responsibility to defend our rights. It is time we defend them for ourselves. Now, I agree with Captain John Parker when he faced the British at the Battle of Lexington. He told us we need to stand. He told his soldiers to stand their ground. Don't fire unless fired upon, but if they mean to have war, let it begin here. Well, I'm telling the American people, it is time we stand our ground. We are not subjects. We are not slaves. We are not vassals of the vast government out of Washington, D.C. We are its masters. We created it. We need to stand our ground. Where do we stand? How do we stand? Learn from the Constitution. Don't fire unless fired upon. We will not initiate violence. But if they want to have war, if they want to go to arms over this, whether that be a war of words, whether that be a war of guns, whether that be a war of law enforcement, if they mean to have war, let it begin here. Because if we don't fight this war today, there will be nobody who knows how to fight it tomorrow. Because the knowledge and understanding of the Constitution has been systematically removed from the American psyche and from the American society. And those of us who are working to restore that are the ones who are fighting for liberty. So I'm going to ask you to join me. Head to constitutionstudy.com for more information, articles, videos. Sign up for the newsletter. Keep your eye out for the classes that I'm working on. But more important, try this. Go to constitutionscholars.com. That's where students of the Constitution are joining together. Sure, we've got classes, we've got books, we've got videos. But more importantly, we have a community We have communities that are gathering together, finding out they're not alone, finding out that there are other constitutionally minded Minutemen and Minutewomen ready to stand up for freedom and liberty. You are not alone. And Constitution scholars will help you find other patriots in your state, in your town, that are interested in learning and studying the Constitution and defending their rights. We must stand, because the day has come that Ronald Reagan warned us about. A day when we have to explain to the rising generation what it was once like in America where men were free. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on a tipping point. I don't know how much longer the concepts of freedom and liberty will survive in America if we don't stand up and begin defending them. If all you're going to do is sit back and pound on a keyboard and whine and complain but not do anything, you are part of the problem. But if you're willing to read and study and stand, you don't have to stand for everything. You don't have to be the person out front. But if you're willing to read and study and stand and support the people who are doing the hard work of ensuring your liberty, then you are part of the solution. You can be a constitutional Minuteman or Minutewoman. You can be the person who stands their ground when the hordes of tyrants and despots and petty dictators come for your rights. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser in the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can listen on our apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa, and you can find the podcast there as well. So check out AmericaOutloud.com and join us here next time for the Constitution Study.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.